Hello everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Sounds and Sights of Cinema here on WHIE Radio and DVDVerdict.com. I'm your host, Clark Douglas, and we've got another good program for you today. Coming up later on in the show, we'll have a review of Ron Howard's new comedy, The Dilemma, starring Vince Vaughn and Kevin James. And right now, on the musical side of things, we continue our countdown of the very best film scores of 2010. Over the past couple of programs, we counted down from numbers 20 to 11, and this week we'll be counting down from number 10 to number 6 on the top 20 list. And we continue with selection number 10, which is I Am Love, scored by John Adams. This soundtrack is one of 2010's most unique efforts, a score by a very acclaimed composer who hasn't done much in the realm of film. Adams' often bombastic score contrasts very strikingly with the subdued emotions of the characters in the film, and for the most part, it works very well. Let's take a listen now to some of John Adams' I Am Love.
Thank you.
That's music from I Am Love, written by John Adams. I do hope you enjoyed that. Next up, we move along to number 9 on our countdown. It's True Grit by composer Carter Burwell. This one was a little tricky to place, as a large portion of the score is based on pre-existing material, which disqualified the score for Oscar consideration. However, Burwell's use of numerous hymns and folk tunes, particularly Leaning on the Everlasting Arms, is superb, and the composer orchestrates them in a manner that makes them feel like his own. It's another fine effort from a perennially underappreciated composer. So let's take a listen now to some of Carter Burwell's True Grit. Thank you. Music by Carter Burwell, heavily incorporating the old hymn Leaning on the Everlasting Arms into his score for True Grit. Coming in at number 8 on our countdown of the best film scores of 2010 is Clint Mansell's Black Swan. This is yet another score which relies heavily on pre-existing material, though not quite as much as Burwell's score. The use of Tchaikovsky works magnificently, but it must be noted that Mansell has made some masterful tweaks in his orchestration and that his original material is very effective. Without paying any attention to who wrote what, this is quite possibly the year's best overall soundtrack. However, to give it the top position would seem to give Mr. Mansell slightly more credit than he deserves, even though he deserves a good deal of credit. So, 8th place feels like a fair compromise, and without further ado, here's Clint Mansell's Black Swan.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Sounds and Sights of Cinema here on WHIE Radio and DVDVerdict.com. I'm your host, Clark Douglas, and we're counting down the best film scores of 2010. We just featured number 8, Black Swan, by composer Clint Mansell. Now we move on to number 7, which is Tron Legacy from Daft Punk. I was desperately hoping that I would actually be able to use the phrase Daft Punk to describe this score, but the truth of the matter is that this is one of the year's most thoroughly entertaining soundtracks, offering an intelligent, surprisingly well-crafted fusion of orchestral fireworks and electronic flavor. Daft Punk dramatically raises the enjoyment level of a film which is rather tedious in many other ways. So without further ado, let's take a listen to Daft Punk's Tron Legacy. We'll be right back. That's music from Daft Punk, written for Tron Legacy. And that comes in at number 7 on our countdown. Coming in at number 6 is another score from Alexandra Desplat, written for Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows, Part 1. Though Desplat's first venture into the world of Harry Potter lacks the immediately memorable thematic content of the efforts by John Williams and Patrick Doyle, it's nonetheless an excellent, rewarding work. Desplat's score retains the understated approach adopted by Nicholas Hooper for the previous two films, but is far richer in terms of construction and far more compelling upon repeat listens. I'm greatly looking forward to hearing what he'll do with Part 2, but right now let's take a listen to some of Part 1 of Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows. that's music from composer Alexandre Desplat, written for Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows, Part 1. Next week, we'll move along to the top 5 film scores of 2010, but right now, it's time for this week's movie review of the new film, The Dilemma. Ron Howard's new comedy has been taking a pounding from critics in recent days, as many have noted that Howard's sense of comic timing seems to be more than a little rusty. Howard hasn't directed a comedy since 2000's The Grinch Who Stole Christmas. He hasn't directed an enjoyable comedy since 1994's The Paper. While the film often stumbles in its attempts at generating laughs, the deeper subjects at its core actually manage to resonate. Our story centers on Ronnie Valentine, played by Vince Vaughn, and Nick Brannan, played by Kevin James, two guys who have been friends since college. They're both working on creating an environmentally friendly electric engine which still has the rumbling oomph of a classic car. The auto manufacturer they're working for has placed them on a tight deadline, but with some hard work they should be able to finish the project soon. Nick has been married to Geneva, played by Winona Ryder, for 20 years, while Ronnie is currently dating Beth, played by Jennifer Connelly. Ronnie has been in a lot of relationships over the years, but he thinks it may finally be time to settle down. While hunting for the perfect place to propose to Beth, Ronnie accidentally witnesses something astonishing. Geneva passionately making out with a heavily tattooed guy named Zip, played by Channing Tatum. Ronnie's first instinct is to spill the beans to Nick, but Geneva begs him not to. After all, if Nick is plagued by the knowledge of his wife's infidelity, he might not finish his work on the engine in time. What's a good friend to do? I have to admit, I was expecting The Dilemma to be a funnier movie than it is, not because the trailers were particularly entertaining or because the reviews had led me to believe that it was a laugh riot, but simply because Ron Howard once had a real knack for comedy before he became the director of important Oscar-nominated films. The Dilemma actually does have some laugh-out-loud moments, but the comedy works best when it isn't trying too hard. Howard excels at little throwaway gags, the amusing flashback snippets, for instance, and squirm-inducing comedy of discomfort, such as the remarkably awkward toast Ronnie gives at Beth's parents' 40th anniversary party. But whenever the film goes broad, it falls flat on its face. The over-the-top confrontation between Ronnie and Zip is meant to be a comic highlight, but instead it proves a wince-inducing misfire. Fortunately, The Dilemma's plot is not merely a cheap excuse to generate a series of comic set pieces. Rather, the film is a surprisingly honest examination of complicated people trying to deal with a complicated situation. There are touches of humor that come organically from this, otherwise the comic moments feel like clumsy attempts at reminding the audience that they're watching a comedy. You know those comedies in which characters go to elaborate lengths to prevent an important truth from being leaked out? I'm talking about films like Hitch, in which Will Smith tried to hide the true nature of his identity from Eva Mendes, or The Switch, in which Jason Bateman tried to hide the fact that he was the sperm donor who fathered Jennifer Aniston's child. The Dilemma plays as if screenwriter Alan Loeb, who wrote The Switch, watched his own movie and decided to confront the frustrating clichés he had previously embraced. In most films like this, it's immediately obvious that everyone will be better off if the protagonist just gets the truth out there right off the bat and works from there. The Dilemma succeeds in making us empathize with Ronnie's hesitation, setting up a series of potential chain reactions that could have devastating effect if he says the wrong thing at the wrong time. For once, we aren't inwardly shouting, "Just spill the beans and get it over with!" That was a nice surprise, but even more rewarding is the way the film handles the inevitable release of the information Ronnie has been hiding. In the aforementioned Hitch and The Switch, and oh so many others, the release of crucial information is followed by hysteria, a quick breakup, a period of reflection, and then a warm reunion. At no point in this process is the truth that has been revealed ever really discussed or dealt with in any significant way. It's simply forgotten about and the characters move on. When the bomb is finally dropped in The Dilemma, Howard and Loeb make a startling move. The characters involved try to process the information, deal with it like adults, and then proceed to actually listen to everyone's side of the story before jumping to conclusions. I suppose this is nothing earth-shattering, but it happens so infrequently in movies that I was immensely moved. The Vaughn character is the sort of guy the actor has played many times before, a quick-witted yet immature man-child. What's fascinating about the dilemma is the way the screenplay pushes this character into a corner and forces him to act like a grown-up. Vaughn's signature nervous chatter is this time applied to a man who's coming to the realization that he's finally making decisions of genuine consequence. The business move he's just made will make him or break him. Either he takes his relationship with Beth to the next level or risk losing it. His relationship with Nick could be enhanced or broken by the truth of what's going on with Geneva. Vaughn's erratic behavior isn't just sitcom-style mugging, it's rooted in a sense of real despair. Most of the cast fares rather well, for that matter. Kevin James finally gets a role he seems comfortable with and delivers an amusing, sympathetic performance. The actor successfully captures Nick's emotional fragility. He's a nice guy, but little problems can easily turn into very stressful situations for him. Jennifer Connelly doesn't quite have as much screen time as she deserves, but she offers a persuasive performance as a woman willing to give her husband the benefit of the doubt, but unwilling to turn a blind eye when there's obviously a problem. Winona Ryder turns in a performance that mostly consists of nervous glares, though she has two crucial scenes that dramatically shift the direction of the movie. The first is surprisingly frightening, the second is surprisingly touching. Less successful are Channing Tatum and Queen Latifah. The former doesn't have the comic timing required to really sell his character, and the latter is saddled with a handful of lines too ungainly for any actress to survive. I realize that The Dilemma isn't great cinema. For that matter, it isn't even very good. Its moments of awkward, floundering slapstick comedy are as weak as its moments of thoughtful insight are strong. Still, I can't begin to tell you how exhilarating it was to see a film so blatantly subverting a tiresome formula. I believed most of the story, I was emotionally invested in the characters, and the moments that don't work do little damage to the moments that do. I give it 3 stars out of 4. And I'll add a quick side note. The Dilemma was the subject of controversy when the trailer was released, as it included a joke that some regarded as homophobic. The joke is still in the movie, and it isn't particularly funny, but it isn't particularly offensive either. Far more questionable lines pop up in movies all the time. This one just happened to catch the media's attention. For what it's worth, I don't think it's worth fussing over. Anyway, we conclude our program today, and we'll be back next week with the completion of the series counting down the best film scores of 2010 and another movie review. Right now, we close out with a remixed score selection from Daft Punk's score for Tron Legacy. Have a great week, everyone. Back at you later.